I had my first husband, he hurt me. So I don't like to talk about it.
Oh. You don't want to talk about
it? Yeah. Anyway, I was going inside.
What, he beat you up?
No, he was too big for me.
Oh.
And I was young and I didn't know anything. So, anyway, it hurt me all the time, it's up all the time. So I didn't know, I thought maybe there's something wrong with me. But then I used to go and play with the kids, you know, the jump rope.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to jump a lot, and my room fell down. You know, didn't come out, but fell down. And then I had to have an operation. And they told me that I had a little tumor about 50 cent size. All this happened later. They sewed my womb so it would fall down, you know.
This seems to have been very common in those days.
Yes, I don't know, but I don't know what it caused exactly, except that I know. I know that he's the one that caused it.
This was after your son was old born?
No, way before. So anyway, will you go in the kitchen? Anyway, I got torn before my son was born. But when did this little tumor start, I don't know. Anyway, I used to jump a lot. Because, see, they sold my womb. See, I had peritonitis and I had appendix before that. So when, I don't know whether at that time, I don't remember because it's been awful long time ago. It's been over 50 years. So they sold my womb so it would keep on falling, you know.
How did they do that?
Well, you know, the doctors, they sew it to the, I don't know how they do it, but inside, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't pay any attention. I was crazy. So I used to go and jump rope. And every time I jumped the rope, you know, I used to bleed and I used to ache, but I didn't know why. Then later on, when I got very sick, the doctor told me that I had a tumor and I had to have another operation. So, well, why did I start telling you that? Oh, you asked me about the menopause. So anyway, I figured, I always figured, well, maybe I'm a little bit abnormal. Because I used to suffer, I used to menstruate something awful. I used to have a big towel at night in the bed so I wouldn't get all, you know, dirty. So anyway, my menopause didn't start, of course. Then they finally, I had the second operation, they took the womb out.
When was that?
That was... Jeez, I don't remember.
Well, by how old were you, do you remember?
That was before I married Oscar. That must have been about 28, 20, I don't remember exactly, but I know I was pretty young here.
You were already in Los Angeles then?
Oh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I figured, well, as long as I already don't have the womb, I won't have this menopause.
Mm.
But to my surprise, when I got to my 40s, I started feeling the same thing like the other women feel. You know, you get these hot flashes, real hot. I mean, from the heels up, and they just go up like somebody put a match. You don't have it yet. Well, maybe you'll never have it. And anyway, and of course, I went to see another doctor. But that was way later. But anyway, I had for years and years, they were giving me some shots for these hot flashes.
Do you remember what the shots were?
Some kind of hormones.
It was hormones?
Some kind of hormones, but I don't know what kind.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I was already married to Oscar when I was getting the shots. And see, that's one of the reasons that I didn't have any. I don't know if I could have had children anyway, because I only had one, and I still don't know how it happened.
Mm.
So I actually don't know if I would have had any more children or not. But anyway, he knew this before I married him, because I told him. And that's one of his regrets, I guess, that I couldn't have any children. So that's all about the menopause. I had it for about 10 years, but I used to get hot, and I used to cry a lot.
Oh,
but
this is an answer. Were you depressed?
Yeah, I used to get very depressed.
Did you understand what it was all about?
Yeah, then I did, because I was already going to a doctor, and by this time I had read books and all that. And I know that without these hormones, I couldn't stand it. But in the meantime, after I had the operation, where they had to sew one, when I saw the womb, one of my ovaries got all wrapped with adhesions. And it was choking. It was so bad that I used to have the most awful pain.
Mm.
So I had to have an operation, and the adhesions was just kind of strangled, like, so they took out one ovary.
Oh, I see, but they left the other ovary.
Yeah, they left the other ovary. So, but by this time I already had these hot flashes, and even after that I had them some more for quite a while. But the crying wave of mine, I think I was all my life, I was a crybaby, but that time was much worse.
Well, how did it affect things, like, in relationship to work?
I don't think it affected me. At least I don't remember that it made any difference, because I did my work. On the contrary, when I used to get those shots, boy, I used to be so pepped up that if they told me to go and jump from the roof, I think I would have done it. So, and that's about it.
When did you start menstruating?
When I was 14 years old.
Oh, because sometimes the belief is that women who start menstruating earlier have a more difficult menopause.
The funniest thing, you know, my mother was very old-fashioned, and I started menstruating in South America. And I was in the river. We were swimming. No, I didn't swim, because I just went to, you know, get wet in the water. And then in front of me, I see this red thing going, and I wonder what it's all about. So I asked the other girl didn't know what it was, so I went home and I told my mother. And instead of, you know, telling me, well, this is what it's all about, she started hollering. She said, don't you go telling anybody, and you just be very careful and don't get wet. But I just came out from the river, imagine. And all these heavy things, and she made me a pad and all this. And I, from then on, I never had any pains. But the pain started after I got married. Oh, it used to be awful. I used to get such horrible pains every month that I used to stay 2 and 3 days in bed after I got married. But this was, I was 16 when I got married. So, I mean, that's about it. I can tell you about it.
Did it affect you once you were working in the shop? Did it affect you then? Did you have
Not yet. No, I didn't have it when I was working in the shop. This was after. But I was already working for the union.
Did you have to take time off?
No. I never did. I just used to feel funny, you know. I can't explain. It's a funny feeling, you know. You feel like you just want to run, like you want to do something, like you want to pull things. You get full of pep, like. But those are the shots that they gave me, the hormones.
How often did you have to just take the shot?
I think I was taking them every week. And then after that, the doctor was going to operate on me for this. He found out that I had this adhesion. And then he brought another doctor to examine me. And I don't know why, but I took such a dislike to the other doctor. When he examined me, he looked to me exactly like Charles Laughton. Remember how his funny mouth he had? And I got so scared that I could hardly wait to get out of the office. The doctor said, you're coming if we don't make arrangements to go to the hospital. And I said, yes. I never went back to him.
So you went to another doctor?
I went to another doctor, and he took out the adhesion that I had. I had adhesions all over, not only on the ovary, but all over. So anyway, I had an appendix operation long time ago, and it turned into peritonitis, and I was in the hospital almost 2 months. Those years, they didn't know anything about penicillin. I don't know why I lived, because it looked like I was going to die. I was so sick.
Was this in Montana?
In Montana. Uh-huh. That was the first operation. Then when they took the ovaries out, that was here in California. So
now, when you had the collapsed womb, what was that like? Could you actually feel where it was?
No, but that's what the doctor said. Oh. But I know it hurt all the time.
Mm.
It was, and I know the thing. At first, I should have taken care of it sooner, but tell you the truth, the doctor said that I couldn't have any children. Well, see, I didn't like my husband. I was still thinking that I didn't have, I wouldn't have any children. But somehow I still got it.
Mm.
Still got one son. Well, anyway.
But they didn't talk about inserting a metal pessary to keep the womb in place at all.
I don't think so. And if they did, I wouldn't have known the difference.
Uh-huh.
I didn't speak very good English at the first time. See?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know exactly if they could or if they couldn't. I don't know.
Oh, because sometimes that's what they use, and I've been trying to find out more from women about it.
I have to go and get me a map about it. I didn't have any other problems.
Okay. And then, which comes first now? When was it that they shot at you?
Well, this was in Montana.
Oh, okay.
That was before I married my second husband. I was already divorced from the first one. I was going around, I told you I was going around with a Mexican fellow. And there was another Mexican that I didn't know. I know he liked me, but I didn't know he was in love with me or anything. His name was Justino, but I don't remember his last name at all. And the one that I married later was not in town. And my mother was having a party. We had a party that night. And this man was invited to the party. He had asked me to go to the show with him before. And I went to the show with him. Just as friends, nothing else. I mean, to me, absolutely was nothing but a friend. I didn't know what he was thinking. So when he was a few blocks only from the house. And when we were coming back from the show, he says to me, "Will you come into my apartment now and get my coat?" And I said, "No." I said, "I'll wait for you," because, I was really old-fashioned and anyway kind of scared of the guy anyway. Not scared, but I didn't know him too well. So he went to his apartment and got his coat. And we went over to my mother's house, and then the party started, and I was dancing with him. And my first husband, my ex-husband, was there because he still lived around and he was always coming around. He never lived. While he lived, he was always looking wherever I am. Mm-hmm. His eyes was always following me. So anyway, I'm dancing with this man, and all at once, he says to me, "Are you going to get married to Joseph? And I said, "Yes." And he says, "No, you're not." And that's all. And he gets out. I don't know where he got the gun from.
This was your first husband?
No, not my first husband. This next husband. No, my first husband didn't have anything to do with it. So this fellow told me that I was not going to marry that other Mexican that I told him. And I said, "Why not?" We weren't even arguing or talking or anything. We were dancing. And all at once he gets a little gun. I don't think to me it was about this big. But he's dancing with me. He puts the gun right here. And at first I thought he was kidding. But just in case, or maybe I noticed that he wasn't, I don't know. I jumped. And as I jumped, he shot. Did you hear? And this was intended for my heart. But somehow when I jumped, so of course my first husband, the reason I bring him into the picture, because my first husband was there, and I remember he had a picture, I don't know whether he had a picture of bear or something in his hand, and he threw it at the man. And the men ran away. And of course, I don't know, I think I started screaming or my
you didn't
mother.
Pass out.
No, I didn't pass out, but I remember that immediately the police came. And of course, it was a terrible scandal because, in the first place, I was not a Mexican and going around with Mexicans. And I wasn't a bad woman, but it sounded like it, because after all, I even shot in my mother's house. So, today I laugh about it, but those days it wasn't funny at all. So I had a beautiful black dress, all pleated. And when they got the doctor right away, and I remember that he tore up my dress, and he found that the bullet had just grazed, and it didn't go out. It stayed in the back of my shoulder. I still have this scar about this big. Mm. And they took me to the hospital and they took out the bullet, and then about 2 or 3 days later some fellows came over and they said that this man had said that if I would forgive him, that he would pay for all my expenses in the hospital. In those days there was no Blue Cross or anything, you know. And like a fool, I said, I'd rather see him dead, and I will not forgive him. But see, we could never could find him. Somebody hid him, and later I heard that somebody hid him in a coal shed and kept him in a coal shed for a few days until he could get out of town.
Oh.
And that was the end of that story. I mean, I never, the only thing that when the other one came back, we got married, and of course he knew the other guy, and see, I wasn't bad looking when I was young, and so I guess, and I preferred Mexicans and Spaniards to South Americans. Not because I don't like my people, but see, I was raised with them. So every time we had a party, or every time I went to a party, mostly would be Spanish or Mexicans or whatever other Portuguese. There was a few Portuguese also. So that was the start of the shooting. And that was the end of it.
Did it take a while to recover?
No, I don't think so. Well, I guess it did, because I was in the hospital maybe a month.
Mm-hmm.
But see, in those days they didn't have the medicine they have today. So when I came out, the thing healed. I had a scar about this thing on my back, but it never bothered me again, never.
So, and you were never shot while you were in the Union?
No, but I saw the guns. I mean, but no, they didn't shoot at me, but there was guns pulled out.
Well, the fact that you'd once been shot must have been...
Oh, boy! It was awful. I used to see even the encasing, or how you call it, how did you know where they put the gun?
Mm-hmm.
The holster.
Mm-hmm.
That used to give me the chills. So that has nothing to do with the Union, but I figured as long as I told. But the other things, I remember that part, I figured I might as well tell you.
Now, tell me, were you involved with the Mandolin Club?
Oh, yeah, we started it.
Oh,
see,
tell me how.
Well, the Mandolin Club, when it first started, I didn't go to, like, I wasn't doing so much work at night. And we had a teacher, his name was David, but I can't remember his last name. By the way, they still have the Mandolin Club, but it's not the same group.
Oh.
And this group has been over 40 years, let's see, 1935. I think in 35 or 34. Do you have a picture of the Mandolin?
Yeah,
does it say anything about the year there, maybe?
I don't recall if it did or not. Maybe it does.
It seems to me that it's on the bulletin board there.
That's what we mean.
You know they still have the Mandolin Club in the Union now?
No, it doesn't.
No, it's just Bill Busick, the one that I told you was the organizer. No, it's not in English, no. Excuse me. This girl here, she worked in the office. Her name was Estella. And she married a man that later on became an organizer at the Union. And then he was the editor of the La Opinión newspaper. And this is the, remember I told you there was a Mexican that didn't like me, that told me that she, if she could, she would wipe that very smirk from my face. That's her, Concha, was her name, I guess. Now this is Mr. Levy, the vice president, and Abe Levy's aunt. And, but I don't think she's the one that was, no, because there were two sisters. One was a communist and one wasn't, she was not a communist. This girl later on became an organizer also. And they were going to send her out to school, but she got married instead. Oh, what is it? That's me, of course. This one, we elected her queen of the Spanish people.
Oh,
group.
When you had that float?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, not when we had the float, when there was the 16th of September.
How did the Mandolin Club start?
Well, they told us if we wanted anything that we'd get the group together. And then this David, I forgot his last name, he was the teacher. So the Union even supplied the mandolins. See? And we'd have a pretty nice group, is it or not? But later on when I got very involved, very busy, I dropped it.
Oh. So how long did you stay
well, with just me? About a couple of years, that's
oh.
all. So that's all. And
did you play just mainly for union
that's
events?
Just for the union, and mm-hmm. and one time when the General Executive Board came, Dubinsky and Dolly group, mm-hmm. you know, we played for them. Oh dear, that was something. To me at least it was something great. It's, you know, like when you got a big concert, to me it was the biggest thing in the world to play for the President of the Union. But the mandolin class kept it up, and then an awful lot of communists went in there later. But I wasn't with them anymore. See, I was in the other union with the sportswear.
Oh,
which is the divide. Yeah.
Well, did you stay just with the...
They stayed with the clockmakers.
Oh.
And then now belongs to all the locals, because now it's mostly retirees.
Oh, so when you switched to 266, that was when you left it?
Yes.
Oh, it belonged to the clockmakers, and when people left the other unions, they didn't stay in it?
Well, they did, the rest of the members. I mean, whoever, it didn't make many difference what local you were, just if you were interested. But I didn't have the time. Or maybe I got in more interested in something else, because I started going to night school. And I used to take up everything. I took hat making, and I took up, first I tried to learn typing, and this is the one thing I couldn't learn. I used to get so nervous, but I used to get a pain in my neck, so I had to drop it. And they wanted me at the union to learn to type because it was important. Never could. So I dropped that. Then we started going to school. I started, not through the union, but outside. I used to go to night school almost two or three times a week. And I started learning to do ceramics. And I started China painting. So I went to the manager of the union, and I told him, I said, you know, would be a good idea. They had told us before that if we get 15 or 16 members that want something, that they will get the teachers.
Oh.
So immediately I went and I got myself a bunch of people that wanted the ceramic class, and I went to the manager, and the manager said, no, we don't need that. I mean, we had singing groups, we had Spanish-speaking groups, English-speaking, I mean, they were teaching them, you know, English and Spanish. They even had a... When I went and I asked about the class, and I had told the people, we even had an embroidery class and sewing class. So I told the girls, well, we have enough people, now we're going to get the class. And I get surprised that, no, we don't need that kind of class. So I figured, well, something has to be done. So I was going to a convention. That was my first convention, no, my second convention. The second convention that I went. The first one I went to Cleveland, the second was in Chicago. And in school I made a world, you know, and there was a dancer on top of it. Something, you know, like they have this China doll with all these fancy dresses. And I made a very pretty one, and I made it into a lamp. I put the light in it and everything, and I didn't tell anybody because I knew if I told, they would say no. So I just went to Chicago, and I asked, where is the president's suit? They wouldn't tell me. Maybe I had a complaint or something, I don't know. And then there was a Negro girl by the name of Dorothy Reed. She was a delegate to the convention too. And I said, Dorothy, you come with me, we're going to go see Dubinsky. So I manipulated until I found out where his room was. And I just walked in one day to his room. And so he looks at me, and he already knew me because he had seen me in mandolin class, and he already knew me because I used to talk to him, and I was already working as an organizer. And so I said, well, I had a hard time to get you. I said, but finally I made it. I said, and the only thing I wanted to do, I wanted to bring you a present. And I gave him this ceramic doll. It was beautiful. Not because I made it, but I had help from the teacher too. And I put down his name and everything. So, of course, after he took it, he liked it very much. And I said, you know, Brother Dubinsky, you have all kinds of classes here in New York where you have all kinds of painting and everything. And I said, we'd like to have a ceramics class over in Los Angeles. Well, of course, he says, of course you're going to get a class if that's what you want. That's all I wanted. So I said, fine. So I left him. And then when And of course I figured nobody's going to know about it, because I took it very quietly to him. But I left the convention about half a day before it ended, because I had to go to Detroit to visit a cousin. And Dos Lee come out in the middle of the meeting, and he announces that Anita Castro had brought him this beautiful lamp, and I don't know, I don't remember whether he showed it to them or not, but I had brought him a lamp from Los Angeles. And he thought it was beautiful, and it was very nice of me to think that we should have a class. So he thought the next time when he comes, he expects to see the class. Well, you know, my manager could say no anymore. So he got the class started. And then the next convention, I didn't go because it was my turn. So I had a plate about this big. I had made it in gold. And I had every one of the girls sign her name to it. It was something like this. I forget. Well, if you ask me how it's made now, I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I know we put some kind of tar, and then after the tar gets a little bit hard, you go with a sharp pen or pencil or some kind of an instrument, and you make the flower. Mm-hmm. And then the teacher went like this with like a sponge, then they put this in some kind of acid, and then into the kiln, into the fire.
Oh, you don't have to take it off.
Yeah. Anita Castro, October 26, 1954, Monterey Park, California. But that was after that we made this plate. So this plate was big, about this big. Mm-hmm. And every girl that was in the class signed her name to it and to this. And I understand that it was a big hit. Well, anyway, I made a couple enemies because of that. Now, I didn't intend to make any enemies, but I knew my boss, you know, the manager, wouldn't allow it because they used to watch him, just like the president, you know how they have these secret service men? Mm-hmm. And that's how they watch the president of the union. So somebody wouldn't just pop up and say something or whatever it is. So they didn't want me to go to see him, and they got mad, why didn't I tell him? Because I knew what was going to happen if I told them. So we kept the China painting just for years. I don't know how many years. And of course, I was not a teacher, but I was the most faithful of all, I guess. Friday, no matter what happened, everybody went home. I stayed at the union, and I fired this because we had a kill.
We
had a kill in my office. And I used to stay Friday night and fire the dishes we made, and then go home. And unfortunately, being a scatterbrain that I am, I painted the plate, one long plate with some birds on the wire. And another lady painted something with gold. And when you paint with gold and fire, they stink something awful, that gold, you know. Did you ever have any experience with it? Well, it is an awful smell. And we put my dish in there and her dishes, and I went home Friday night and forgot to take off the plug. And, of course, never dawned on me. So Friday night all night, Saturday all day, Saturday night, Sunday all day, and Sunday night. Monday morning when they came to work, the whole place was in full of smoke and smelled something awful. And imagine we had a clinic downstairs, and we had a drugstore right under me. Well, the kiln was right here, and it got so hot that it made a hole. It went down. And then when it got to the floor, it made another hole on the floor. But just before it burst into flames, or before it went down because it was going to die in the middle of the medicine, I come to work, and I thought everybody's going to kill me. And I couldn't imagine what's wrong. What the hell are you doing in here with your junk? And why, if you don't know how to watch it, then you have no business taking care of it. And I still don't know what they're talking about, except that I smell the gold. But the manager, calls me in his office, and he says, Anita, he says, I am too mad to even talk to you. He says, there's nothing I can do, otherwise I will do it. I knew what he would do. He was firing, but he couldn't. So he said, no more classes. Well, what could I say? I mean, I was lucky that I didn't get it worse. So I called the teacher and I explained to him what happened and no more classes. And I used to feel the dishes that I had unfinished, that I had to fire later by myself, that belonged to some of the girls. About 2 weeks ago, one came from Puerto Rico, and I had a plate of hers for, almost 20 years.
Oh, you still had it?
No, I gave it to her, Yeah, because it had her name on it, and I figured, well, it isn't mine anyway.
But you had it all those 20 years?
Yeah.
So this isn't about in the 50s?
In the 50s. Well, no, later than that. Because, see, when this happened, well, we had the class by the wall yet, but I don't remember how many years, maybe five more years or something like that.
Oh.
We had it by the wall.
Now, what was the purpose of...